Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, people? I'm Jake Painting. Welcome to episode 2 of Paint Points. As usual, you can find my work over at Canis Hoopus. You can follow me at Twitter at Jake Painting, JakePaynting. Today we'll be draft centric again. I'll be joined by my first guest, and we'll just go through some rapid fire draft questions. Without further ado, let's introduce our guest. He writes great work over at A Wolf Among Wolves. He's the host of the Wolf Among Wolves podcast, and he also runs a really great YouTube account. Welcome to the show, Brendan Hedgey.
Jake, thanks for having me, man.
No worries. So how's everything at the moment over there with the lockdown and the coronavirus stuff? You managing?
Yeah, I'm trying to manage. Our county was down pretty significantly for the most part, and now we recently have hit a spike in numbers because testing improved, so it's kind of, we're seeing a big increase in cases in our county.
Yeah, it's really bad, especially compared to here. It's really bad over there, and I hate seeing, you know, all my US friends kind of going through it. It's obviously still prevalent over here, but it's much better. We're kind of down to like under 20 cases a day. So, yeah, I think it's mainly because we're an island as well, so it's easier to just kind of lock the whole thing down as soon as it started. But it's hard to watch all my American friends going through that stuff. We'll just do some rapid fire draft questions. I know you know a ton about the draft as well, and you've been writing and tweeting a lot about the draft. So I'm interested to see your thoughts on that. So we'll just start with the first question. Pretty straightforward. Who's your first pick? If you were, you know, the GM with the first overall pick, who would you be taking?
Right. So I think it's kind of interesting, depending on what your team needs, realistically. Most teams, if I was running most teams, I would probably select LaMelo Ball. But there is a case to be made for some teams to take, like, Wiseman or Okongwu, or even some people might say, like, Anthony Edwards might fit their team better. Like, the Warriors may not take, like, LaMelo due to having a really good front court already, or back court. So,
yeah.
But yeah. I would say LaMelo Ball is my number one pick in this draft.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think I'd be surprised if, yeah, like a Warriors team took LaMelo, especially with the inherent risk with him. I think all of the top players in this draft have a ton of bust potential, really. It's a pretty weak class. But I think they'd take Wiseman. Personally, I went with Edwards. I know that I'm a bit higher on Edwards than a lot of other people, but I think wings that can kind of, you know, initiate their own offense, score, pass, play defense. It's all very kind of subjective with him because he can do all those things. But whether he does do them consistently is another question. But I think if you're willing to take a punt on a high reward player, I think Edwards is the guy for me.
He has a lot of things you can't really teach, and a lot of things that if he shows the effort all the time, I think that he'll turn out to be the best player in this draft, more than likely.
Yeah, and I think the same goes for LaMelo Ball. I think he's got a lot of things wrong with him, but I think the things that are good with him, if he kind of hits that potential, then he's going to be a super player. All right, let's go into number two. That one was kind of a pretty simple one. Who's your personal favorite?
Not really pick one, but I have four guys in mind that I really like. Sadiq Bey is one that I've really grown to like as I study him more and looking in the draft more, I think he's a player that many people don't really look at him as like a top prospect, but he could be maybe even one of the biggest sleepers of this draft too, but we'll talk about that later. So Sadiq Bey's one. Devin Vassell, or Vassell, however you say his name, he's a favorite of mine as well. And then Tyrell Terry, I like him due to his connections with the state.
I knew you were high on
Terry. I knew you were high on Terry.
Like Killian Hayes too, and people seem to be all over the board on him. I don't know. My thoughts are mixed with having him on the Timberwolves due to him being very similar to LaMelo, where they're left-handed guards that really can't go right in that situation. But I do like Killian Hayes, and I think he has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I think I'm the same with Hayes. I think I do like his potential, but the first thing is it's hard to watch film on him as well, because he's just so hard to find games and stuff in the French league with Hayes. But I do like him. I think, like you said, he loves his left hand. I think he's a little bit like D'Angelo Russell in that vein, that he kind of is that left-hand dominant guard that doesn't love going right, doesn't get to the ring as much as he probably could. So I think, he's a little bit redundant with D'Angelo Russell, but I do like Hayes. It's just so hard to find film on him enough for me to watch and kind of get a really good read on him. Bay's one that I haven't watched much of. I know you're high on Bay, and I know a few other guys who are high on him, so he's kind of one that I've been trying to get around to, but there's just so much to watch and so little time to do it. So there's a lot of time to do it since we're in lockdown, but there's so many players to get to. What do you like about Terry? I haven't really watched much about Terry.
Yeah, so Terry's stroke is like one of the smoothest shot forms in the entire college basketball, and definitely one of the best in the drafts, where he just looks so smooth shooting the ball that I think it's going to translate really well. And I think he can be like a secondary scorer, maybe come off the... He's never going to be like a star, but I think he can come off the bench and provide that scoring punch, or just even like a shooter that's just going to shoot 40 to 42% from the field. I think his form, his shooting mechanics, everything like that is really nice about him. And that's his like NBA ready skill. A lot of people talk about those NBA ready skills. He might not have a lot of them, but his shooting is one that is worth taking if you need a shooter. Like maybe the 76ers need a shooter, they can take Terry to do some of that for him.
Yeah, and I think having one really ready NBA skill is kind of better than having a bunch that might be ready. I think in the long term that might be better, but I think when you come in, if you can shoot the lights out, that's a skill that translates straight away. I think we saw that kind of with Jarrett Culver, how he had a bunch of skills that theoretically could be really good, but none of them were yet, and he kind of saw him struggle straight away.
I think the opposite kind of happened with Okogie, where he had his NBA ready skill, which was like his point of attack defense. And that's translated really well to the NBA. Some of the other stuff hasn't. Like, he was a much better shooter in college, but that wasn't considered to be his NBA-ready skill. It was his point-of-attack defense and his energy, which we've definitely seen at the NBA level.
Yeah, Kogi's one of them guys who kind of is, like, the prototype for not judging college guys straight away on what they did in college. Because when I researched him after we drafted him, he didn't strike me as, like, this hellacious point of attack defender. I thought he was solid, but he was a good shooter. He was a good scorer. I think he averaged like over 18 points a game, and then he kind of comes into the NBA and he can't really do much at all on offense. So he's definitely one of the guys I keep in mind when I'm trying to study prospects, because you just never know when they get to the bigger leagues.
Yeah, like when we drafted Okogie in that 2018 draft, I remember I was with my brothers and I said, I don't know who this guy is. And I like to keep, this was before I started writing, but I like to keep up with the draft some, and I had no idea who Josh Okogie was. So it's interesting where some of these people can come out of the woodwork and really be a good player in the NBA when a lot of people don't know them out of college. I think the NCAA tournament would have been a big thing for us to really get a good look at some of these prospects and have people like raise their draft stock or have their stock fall. we didn't get that, so I think this draft will be interesting to see how that affects how teams do.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of the time kind of players rise so much in the tournament, which is, you know, for better or worse.
We saw sometimes with Tyus Jones in 2015. He rose. That final four run solidified him as a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, and I think sometimes it works out, and other times it kind of pushes people's stock a bit too high, where they, you know, have a good run of four or five games, and all of a sudden they're a lottery talent, when probably in reality, you know, the 30 game sample size beforehand was probably a better you know, way to gauge them.
Mm-hmm.
But so I'll get into mine. My personal favorite, obviously, like I raved about Devin Vassell last week, so I'm not going to go too much into him. Right. I think you said as well, he's one of your favorites. I just think he's a perfect fit for so many teams. His team defense raises floors on teams, and if he becomes the shooter that he looks like he can become, I think he's a really, really good 3-and-D prospect, and I think they're really valuable at the moment. I don't think he'll ever be a true star, but I'm not sure how many players will in this draft. But I think he's one of the most surefire kind of high floor, high ceiling kind of guys. So I chose another one because I didn't want to you know, kind of talk about Vassell too much. I went with Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah.
So the Kentucky guard. Average 14 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. So nothing kind of overly flashy, but I think he's got a really good, like, really good floater game, really good finish around the rim. He didn't shoot very well. He only shot about 30% this year, but I think he's a better shooter than that. He was a better shooter in high school. He kind of has a nice looking, he has nice looking form, nice touch on his free throws and his shots around the rim, so that gives me confidence that he could become a better shooter. I'm not sure what his position is really in the NBA. Like, I think he's 6'3", you know, 200 pounds, so that's point guard size, but he's averaged, you know, 3 assists. He's not the best kind of table setter, but I think he could definitely thrive as kind of that combo guard off the bench, like a six man, like a high minute six man kind of guy. He just does a lot of things well. He's a way better defender than you kind of think he would be at 6'3", 200. Really good team defender. He's got one of the higher, you know, defensive box plus minuses for all guards in the NCAA. So I'm a really big believer in Tyrese Maxey. If he could slip to 16, which I think is kind of a little bit of a wishful thinking, but if he slipped to 16, I'd be rapt if Minnesota could pick him up.
Do you think that Vassell will last to 16, or are you convinced he'll go before that? Because at the beginning of my draft stuff, it was looking like he would probably last to about that pick, but now I'm feeling like he's going in that 8 to 12 range more than lasting to 16.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. When I started, it seemed like he was going to be, yeah, like you know, 12 to 18. But the more mock drafts I see, and the more people, you know, you can never tell, because like draft Twitter and whatnot is not the best way to, you know, it's not how the way GMs and stuff are thinking. But I think I'd be surprised if he lasted past 12. I think New Orleans at 13, I'd be surprised if he got past them. I think he'd be a really good fit for them. So yeah, I think if you're Minnesota and you want to get him, you probably get him if you move down the lottery and maybe get him at like 6 or 7, which might be a reach, but I'd still be pretty happy with that pick.
Yeah, and it seems like Maxey's kind of had the opposite thing, where when I first looked into him, he was more in that 7 to 8 range, and now he's falling a little bit to like 12, 13. And so if he gets to 16 and we have the 16th pick, I think he's worth taking a look at.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Bay's definitely the kind of guy who will be there at 16. I think I wouldn't be surprised if a team kind of reached a little bit at, you know, at 10, 12, 13 to get him. But he seems like the most likely guy out of the ones we talked about to kind of definitely be there at 16.
Right.
All right, we'll go into question 3. So who do you think I know you mentioned a little bit before, but who do you think the biggest sleepers are?
Okay, so I talked about Tyrell Terry. I think some people are really low on him and some people are really high on him, but I think the overall consensus, they're kind of low on him. So I think he's kind of a sleeper. Desmond Bane from TCU, I like him. Problem with him is he's 21 years old. Same thing with Sadiq Bey. Like, they're 21 years old, so they're not young players coming in the draft at age 18, 19, stuff like that. Tyler Bey is another person. Trey Jones, Daniel Oturu. I all think they're better than what they're getting, like, recognition for. So, but I'm not too big on, like, sleepers, because usually it seems like the draft has a little bit more of a consensus, and this one seems to be all over the place. So it's hard to pick out a sleeper, because someone might have someone going undrafted, and then someone might have them in the first round. I've seen that with Daniel Oturu. He's going 25th in one draft, and he's not even drafted in the next person. So it's hard for me to pick a true sleeper.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one of them drafts where it's just all over the place. Like, guys like Vernon Carey and stuff, I've seen him go in the 20s, and then I've seen him go late in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, guys like Kira Lewis, who was one of the guys I had down. I think I've seen him go in the lottery. I know a lot of people, like a lot of the draft Twitter guys, are pretty high on him in the lottery, and then other places where he's going in the 30s or the 40s. I do think Lewis is a good player. He's kind of really small, but he's like quick and shifty, gets to the ring, shoots the ball well, shoots pull-ups well, passes pretty well. So he's a guy I think is a bit of a sleeper. Desmond Bane, as you said, I'm leading the bandwagon on Desmond Bane. Yeah. I think he's definitely the guy I want in the second round. I think in the second round, if you're picking a 21-year-old at 33, I think you're not too worried about kind of how high their potential is. I think they've obviously still got room to grow at 21, but it's not kind of you're not losing too much by having a player who's 2 or 3 years older than a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
But I had another one, Xavier Tillman from Michigan State. I think I'm not sure how he pans out at the next level, but he was a really good player in college. He doesn't shoot. He's 6'11", doesn't shoot, but he's really good in the paint, really good pick and roll scorer and passer, defends the rim really well. He's really strong, so he's the kind of guy who I wouldn't mind having as a backup center. I've been known as not a huge Naz Reid believer, but I don't think Rosas would take him over Naz just because he doesn't shoot threes, but he's the kind of guy I think who could like walk into the NBA and help a good team off the bench as a center. But I think like you said, there's a lot of guys who could be classified as sleepers, but you never really know, do you? Half the sleepers end up as players who don't end up playing in the league, and then half of them end up as good rotation guys. It's just it's a crapshoot.
Right, for sure.
All right, number four, question four. Who do you think has the most bust potential or most likely to be a bust?
Okay, I don't know how you feel about this player. I haven't seen, maybe you talk about him a lot and I just haven't seen it, but someone I'm really down on that everybody else seems to be really high on is Obi Toppin from Dayton. I'm very low on him. I think he doesn't move well. His lateral quickness is not there. He gets blown past. He's an okay defender in the paint because he's big, but he can't defend the perimeter at all. It's horrendous defense. So I don't know. I think he has a low ceiling. I don't think the player he can be is like a star player by any means. And people are drafting him in the top five, and I think he's more of like a 20th pick around there. I think he could be a really big bust.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's not the guy I had down, but I definitely agree with you on that. I think, like you said, his lateral movement and his hip movement is just so bad. He's not going to be able to switch onto anyone or play on any stretch four types. I think even in the paint, like you said, he's strong, but he doesn't move well. He doesn't read post moves well at all. He's not going to block a lot of shots. I think he's really good offensively. But I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he can be like a Karl Anthony Towns, say, where he kind of scrapes by being like generational offensively. I think he's kind of just like a good offensive player and a really bad defensive player. And I don't think that cuts it as a five. I don't think he'll be a power forward at the next level. I think he has to be a five.
Yeah, and I think guard. He doesn't possess the post moves either that I think takes to be like a really quality power forward. at the next level either. So I'm not high on him.
Yeah, I think if you can't defend the rim overly well or defend in space, and then you're not going to be like really, really good offensively. I just don't see how you ever become more than kind of a rotation player. Mm-hmm. I don't think he'll be out of the league bad, but no, I don't see him being like a star or a fringe star.
Right.
My one, you're not going to like this, is LaMelo Ball.
I think he does have a lot of bust potential. I'm not going to argue with you there. I think he's boomer bust, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think obviously it's easier. He's the easiest guy for me to watch because obviously I'm in Australia and I can watch all of the games on like mm-hmm. On the sports channels over here. So I've been binge watching him. To start off with, he's a ridiculous passer. Like, no two ways about that. He'll walk into the league as a special passer from day one. Mm-hmm. Some of the angles and the passes he just creates out of nowhere really are crazy. Like, almost best in the league from day one. But I just think apart from that, like, he's got good handles, but I don't think he creates his shot very well. Like, he doesn't get a lot of space with his handles. His shot mechanics are still all over the place. They're definitely better than they were at Spire, and they seem to be getting better kind of by the game, which is encouraging. But I think it's a long way before he's ever like a 36% shooter. And the way he's like his shot selection makes that even harder because he just loves shooting silly shots.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that really hurts him. And then I think the biggest thing is the defense. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's never been asked to play proper defense until this year. He just looks so lost, and you know he can't fight through screens. He can't stay in front of his man individually. He's really undersized strength wise. I think the fact that he had to play against grown men probably hurt him in that case a little bit. Like, he probably would have looked a little bit better if he was playing against 19-year-olds, having to defend, you know, other point guards who are kind of his size instead of, you know, 230-240-pound guys.
But when he gets into the NBA, he's going to have to be guarding grown men.
That's, yeah.
Those guys are even better than the players playing in the NBL. So at the college level could have maybe helped him get a little bit of confidence defensively. But
yeah.
The NBA is going to be even tougher. The only thing I have with his defense is, I mean, he's got the length to guard, but his brother, Lonzo, is such a good defender that maybe you think there's a little bit of hope for him, but I'm not certain how much realistically, but you can pray for that. He has the tools to do it.
Yeah, I think that's the glass half full kind of is with Lonzo, and they're kind of similar size, I guess, like length and height wise. I think Lonzo was always a little bit bigger, build wise. But I think the main problem with the defense, more than just the, you know, the physical limitations and stuff, is the effort.
Mm-hmm.
I think he doesn't try enough. There's so many times where he'll hit the screen, and it's not that I think he struggles to fight through them. But then he just doesn't even try to fight through them. He'll just let himself get screened off and let someone else deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the same thing on offense is when he does get to the, he can get to the rim fairly well, but he avoids contact like it's the plague.
Yeah.
And that's going to hurt him so much at the next level. I know he's not going to be a player who kind of like forces his way through things, but if you're trying to go up and under and around every single rim protector instead of just trying to get to the line, that really hurts your efficiency at the rim. And I think that's a big problem. I just point guards who don't project to be a good shooter or a good defender just stinks of bust to me.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a special passer and he's going to be a fun player to watch, I think. Like, even if he's worse in the league bad on defense, he's going to be one of them guys where, like, he's going to be on House of Highlights and Bleacher Report from day one. All right, so let's go to question five. We'll finally put out on our Timberwolves glasses. So who do you think is the best fit for Minnesota, or best fits, you know, at either pick?
So it's interesting because the general consensus is the team needs a power forward to play next to Towns. But the other general consensus is this draft doesn't have a power forward really that can play next to Towns that also is like a shooter. Like some people might argue Wiseman or Okongwu to play next to Towns and be a defender, but neither of those two are going to stretch it out and shoot like the team wants. So I didn't really have a power forward to put. I put Sadiq Bey because I think he's like 6'8", and he's not like a skinny 6'8", where Devin Vassell's kind of lanky. Bey's a little more built.
Yeah, I don't think Vassell could play the four, really. Like maybe pinch hit at the four Vassell, but I don't think you could like start him at the four like
Covington. Yeah, and I think you could almost use Sadiq Bey in that role where he plays four every now and then. He's not going to do it the entire game, but I think he could pinch hit in that four role a little bit. But I think he's just such a good shooter that I think that would help the team out too. And even if you run him at a small forward and find somebody else to play that power forward, because we don't have a solidified small forward. We have a Kogi, but he's like 6'4". Beasley's not big enough to always play small forward. He's not guarding LeBron. He's not guarding Paul George, Kawhi, anybody like that. But then another person, I think Trey Jones would be a really good backup point guard to come in, as much as I like Jordan McLaughlin.
Yep.
I think Jones is a good passer. He's a good defender. He showed improvement in his shot and his scoring ability. And I think he'd be someone you could maybe snag in the second round with like the 34th pick or whatever pick we're going to have. I think he's someone you could maybe take there and gamble. Not even a gamble. That could be your backup point guard.
Yeah, I think Jones would be a good pick in the second round. And I think, like you said, I think this team needs a small forward kind of just as much as it needs a power forward. Like, obviously, the power forward, especially if Wancho leaves or doesn't come get re-signed, I think the power forward would be, like, the most glaring position. But I don't think Okogie's a starting three in the league. I think he's a really good kind of energy player off the bench, and even, I think he could even be a starter on certain teams as a two, but I don't think he's ever going to be a starting three. I think definitely looking for a small forward somewhere in this draft would be beneficial. I think Vassell or Edwards, I think if it's like top three or top, 4 to 7, they were my guys. We talked about that before. I had Sadiq Bey as well. I know I haven't watched as much of him as I'd like, but I think at 16 he's good value. I think a guy like Patrick Williams would be a good pick, like as you said, as a four. I don't think he's a bit too young and inexperienced to come in and really like start, 32 minutes as a power forward. But I think he's the kind of guy who should groom to be that starting power forward eventually. 18 years old, he kind of defends the rim well. He rotates really well as a defender. He shot, I think, 32% on threes, but he's got a really really nice shot motion. Shot a high percentage from the free throw line, so that's a good indicator that that he could be a good shooter. I think he's the kind of guy he could mold into like that stretch four who can also defend the rim. And they're kind of, I think they're like one of the most valuable archetypes around at the moment. That stretch four who can still defend on the other end. So he's definitely one of the guys I like. I think in the second round, like I said, Bain. Tillman, maybe if they don't like Reed. I like a few other guys like Devin Dotson and Emmanuel Quickley. I think they're both good players. I'm not sure how they turn out the next level, but I think Dotson's a really good backup point guard. Like you said, I like McLaughlin, but I'm not sure if what's going on with him. Obviously, I think if they think they can get a better player in the draft, they definitely should. I think Jones or Dotson would both be really good picks there. And Emmanuel Quickley, he's a strange one. He led Kentucky in scoring, and they had some good players. They had, Maxey and Ashton Hagans, like some really good, scoring guards, and he still kind of led them in scoring. He shot 42% from three. He shot over 90% on 5 free throws a game. So that's a really good indicator of a good shooter, but I'm just not sure kind of what else he does really well. I'm not even sure he's a high volume 3-point shooter. He was kind of just like a bit of a do-it-all player at Kentucky. But I think you take a flyer on him at 33. I haven't got this written down, but do you think they'll trade one of the picks?
So I talked to both Logan Elton and also Lucas Siafer about this, and it's hard to think that Rosas isn't going to really look into it. I'm certain he is checking every option. I wouldn't be surprised if he trades one of them. Again, I have no inside knowledge whatsoever, but just from watching him do his work and everything he's done in Houston and here, I think that there's a decent chance he trades both. I think we should use both unless we're getting a solidified star with one of them. I think try and hit the target, hit the bullseye on maybe one of the picks, but I wouldn't be surprised if he trades one of them. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think, like you said, I've got no inside knowledge, but I'd be surprised if he's not looking to get a really solid rotation player who's already kind of, you know, solidified themselves in the NBA. I think the draft's pretty weak. I think they might trade the first one. I think it's kind of the draft where you just, like, even if you can trade down to 10, and especially if it's like, you know, the 1, 2, or 3, if you can trade down to like 10 to 15 and get two late lottery picks and maybe an asset back, I think that's something that they definitely look at. I think it's hard to imagine them taking all three picks, especially when they've already got like a full roster and still players who are on non-guaranteed contracts like Noel and Vanderbilt and stuff. So I think I think that there's some decisions to be made, and I think if you're going to bring in three guys from the draft, then you've made them decisions a lot harder. So I think if there's the right deal out there, they'll definitely be looking to shop that pick around, any of those picks.
Yeah, for sure. Rosas is not... Nobody's safe, I don't think, besides Cat and D'Lo right now. I don't think anybody's really safe.
So. Yeah, I think this team's not good enough to kind of, you know, rest on their laurels, and I think Rosas knows that. He seems to be pretty aggressive, you know, in trying to make this team better and execute his vision pretty quickly, and I think that's the right thing. I don't think it's kind of playoffs or bust this year, but I think if they're a really bad team and then they get pick 4 or whatever next year and they give it to Golden State, I think that's one way to kind of turn the fan base against you pretty quick.
Right.
That was kind of an unplanned one, but I've been thinking about that over the last few days, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on it. Player that you thought that was good at the college level but didn't pan out in the big leagues, won't pan out in the big leagues, won't pan out in the NBA.
So, usually I like a player because I think they're going to pan out, but at the college level, there's a lot of players that just don't pan out. You see all these senior players like Marcus Howard and these guys that, like, they're good in college. You saw with Carson Edwards, like...
Yeah.
I mean, he's still in the league. He's probably not going to leave the league anytime soon, but he's not going to be a star like he was in college. So there's a number of players like that, but I can't really pinpoint anyone. The couple that I can, that I really like, but might not really pan out, are Denny Avdija and Poku. I don't know how to say his name at all.
Prokachevsky, maybe? Yeah, I haven't done a lot of research on him, but I do feel the same way about him.
Either way, it's like, I think that they're kind of, and I talked about this with Logan, and I'm not comparing them to Giannis or Luka, but it's like, they need the perfect team that's going to develop them, more like Giannis. Giannis had to take years to develop, and I see that with some of them, and if they don't go to the right team, maybe they don't develop like that. If they go to, I don't know, Detroit or Charlotte or something that isn't known for developing players, maybe they don't pan out. If they go to like Toronto per se, then they have a better chance of panning out and turning into something more valuable. So those are the two. I like RJ Hampton. I think he didn't perform great in the NBL from what I understand, but he was playing against, like we've talked, grown men that he might not have been ready for yet. But I could see a world where he doesn't pan out too. But I do like him.
Yeah, I think the same about Hampton. I haven't watched a heap of him. I've kind of been focusing more on Ball in the NBL, but the few games that Ball played against them, I thought he shows a lot of potential. I still think he's kind of a do a lot of things okay player, but not do anything really well. So I think that kind of hurts him. And like you said, it's hard to gauge in the NBL because they're grown men who are kind of playing to feed their families. Rather than, you know, playing for college recognition or to be a first round draft pick or whatever. I think I do like Hampton as well. Like you said with the European guys, I think both of them, not to kind of stereotype them as European guys, but like I think they're the kind of players who could be like Poku could be the Porzingis, or he could be, you know, the Darko. I think they're, I think if they don't pan out, they're going to be really bad players. I think Avija as well. I like him, but I think there's a real scenario where he just can't shoot well enough or create his own shot well enough to kind of make his other skills pop. I think he's a really good passer at 6'7" or whatever, and he's a pretty good defender as well, team defender, but none of that stuff really matters if you can't score at all and you're not even going to be able to kind of start on a team. Like, you're not going to being a decent passer and a decent defender off the bench isn't going to kind of, elongate your career.
Right. I think people are hoping that Avija turns into Luka after Luka came in and really took over the NBA and give some hope to, like, European basketball. I think there's a lot of good players that come from Europe, but I don't want the standard to be Luka because not everybody's going to be Luka. Luka's a transcendent type player, and I think, like, the less educated people covering drafts, which might even include like me, they hope that Luka or that Avdija is going to turn into Luka when it's more likely he's going to be like a Gallinari type of that caliber of player. That's more like his ceiling, in my opinion, which is still a good player. But I don't want people getting their hopes up too much for him.
Yeah, I think it was the same. I think it was the same with like Dirk back in the day. You know what I mean? Like, everyone thought the next wave of European guys were going to be Dirk because they were tall and they could shoot. And I think it kind of just lumps, you know, unfair expectations onto those guys. And then when they're only solid NBA players, everyone kind of thinks they're a bust. When it's more like that was probably their ceiling to begin with. And I think Luka is obviously not very athletic and stuff, so he's easy to compare with guys who aren't jumping out of the gym. But he's you know, ancillary skills and, you know, his intangibles are just off the page. Like, the way he creates his own shot, you know, despite the not having heaps of athleticism, and the way he can pass, he's one of the best passers in the league. You know what I mean? He's not just a good passer for a 6'8" guy. He's like a good passer, full stop. And I think, yeah, to even put Denny in the same vein as him, I think is unfair on Denny, because I think he could be a good player, but he's got a long way to go before he's a superstar. I'd be hesitant drafting him in the top 10. I think he's a late lottery pick.
Yeah.
I said Toppin. I think it's hard. When I watch him, I think, like, you kind of watch him and think, like, shit, he's a good player. Do you know what I mean? Like, because he just dominated at Dayton. He's probably the best
player of the year for a reason. Like, he's not a scrub by any means.
Yeah, and I think it's hard to watch him and kind of be like, oh, he's bad, because he just is really good. And Dayton were a good team, you know, despite not having really any other big threats on their team. So that, I think you've got to take that into account. But also, like we said, there's just a lot of red flags when it gets to the next level. A lot of things that are just going to work in his favour when he has to go up against NBA-level athletes and NBA-level big men who've, you know, been banging bodies with big men for years, rather than kind of where in college, where he's physically dominant and his shooting stands out a bit more. I think he'll still be a good shooter at the next level. I think that's the thing that's going to kind of stand out with him, because the way you move and you know your lateral movement and stuff doesn't matter as much as a shooter. If you can shoot, you can shoot. He'll still be good in like pick and pop and spot up situations. But I don't think he'll ever be kind of the top seven pick that he's going to be. Like he's definitely going to go high. Someone's gonna take him high, and I think they'll end up being pretty disappointed with him.
Yeah.
But the other guy I had was Aaron Nesmith.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of guys are high on him. He reeks of fizzle out to me. I think he shoots it really well, but he got injured. I'm not sure how many games exactly he played, but he got injured pretty early, which you know, limits the regression to the mean kind of potential with him. I think if he had played a bit longer, he would have probably saw his percentages drop a little bit. And outside of that, he just doesn't do anything else very well. Like, he doesn't get to the ring, he doesn't pass the ball very well, he can't really play in pick and roll. He's a pretty bad defender. I think there's a place for shooters in the league that don't do much else, but you have to be, you know, a Duncan Robinson type shooter.
Yeah, like you can't, elite, you can, an elite level.
Yeah,
shooter.
You can't be 38. You can't. Shooter. Yeah, you can't be 38% and do nothing else. I think you have to be, you know, 42% if you're going to do nothing else, and that's a pretty high bar to set. So I think Nesmith is one of the guys. I don't think he's going to get taken really high, but if he's late lottery, you know, mid early 20s, I still think he's one of them guys whose floor is just really low. I think if he doesn't shoot it very well, he'll be out of the league in, you know, 5 years.
There's players I would want over him that do the same thing, but then also provide elsewhere, like Sadiq Bey, yeah. Devin Vassell, or even like Patrick Williams can shoot a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's more valuable where you can play some defense than just be a shooter.
Yeah, I think you sacrifice a few, you know, percentage points off the 3-point shot, and you get, you know, guys who can rebound a bit better, guys who can defend in a team defense a bit better, or even, you know, play a bit of pick and roll as a ball handler. I think that's way more valuable than just being able to shoot at a semi high clip. There's decent shooters are a dime a dozen. I think at the moment you can pick one up off the waiver wire or off, you know, in the free agency pool at any time. I don't think you spend a first round draft pick salary on a guy who can't do much else. Is there any other ones? No. So that's about it, I think. I had a lot of fun talking draft with you. I don't even know when the draft will happen. No one knows when the draft will happen or even when the lottery will happen. But it's kind of good to have something to watch, study prospects, and keep yourself busy, I guess, when there's no NBA to watch.
Yeah. So are they, has the NBL, is their season just over in general, or are they playing it all over there, or what's going on with basketball and sports in your country?
Just as this started, it was in the grand final, the finals series. So I think it's a best of three. And I think it was at like game two when the lockdown started. And I think they just like got the last game out. And then the season finished, so it kind of worked out pretty well. Apart from that, no other sport going on over here. So like we normally have like Australian rules football, which is kind of, you know, our NFL, I guess. So like that's the biggest sport over here in general. That played one round and then got cancelled. So everything's pretty much on hold here. It seems like restrictions will be letting up soon, but I don't think we'll see sport for a while. I'm not sure. Like, what do you think will happen with the NBA? Do you think it'll come back as in the season, or straight to playoffs, or not come back at all?
I think they'll probably do something to play the playoffs. There's no way we finish the regular season because we're already gonna have to push back next season. I could see them shortening the playoffs too. Maybe the first round is 3 games, then 5, then 7-7, just to shorten stuff up. I am not sure. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but time will tell. Nobody knows the answer yet. There's no answer yet.
Yeah.
The NBA doesn't know.
Well, there's not even
we don't know. They're not hiding it from us. They just don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah, and there's not even a you know, an end date kind of in sight. Mm-hmm. So to even start planning what they're gonna do would be futile, I think. But I think it'd be exciting if they did like a best of three playoff series. I think you'd see an upset or two. Yeah.
Teams can get.
I just want basketball back. So yeah,
two games is a lot easier to win than four games. So, but I think they're,
yeah,
the teams and the players are going to understand that things aren't going to be normal for this season and next season. Things are going to change, and it might not be fair, but it's what needs to happen to crown a champion and bring basketball back. So basketball is an interesting sport,
yeah,
where a lot of contact with, like, between the two teams, passing the ball back and forth, unlike, you know, baseball and football, there's less contact. Well, football has a decent amount, but, like, there's less contact where, like, a possible outbreak could happen in the league. Where basketball, everybody's touching the same ball, their sweat's getting on it, and I think that could really turn out badly if they started up too soon.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, it's, and the fans are so close, you know, like,
yeah,
the courtside seats are so close. I don't think fans will be there no matter what happens. I think the fans, like, they're pretty much done for the season.
It's going to be a while before fans are in the stands for sports, in the United States at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I think either way, even, I think the goal is just to kind of do whatever you can this season and then get next season up and running and try, like, hopefully that can run normal. But even at this point, it doesn't look like that could even run normal. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Until all this kind of passes over. So who knows?
What are your thoughts on, kind of switching gears here a little bit, what are your thoughts on LaMelo Ball buying the Hawks down in Australia? What do you think about that?
It's a boss move.
I came in here, I played for this team and I'm leaving now. I'm buying this team.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and he didn't even play the full season. They were terrible as well. And I think they were struggling for, you know, money and stuff. It's not. I think the good teams kind of get a fair bit of money in the NBL, but it's definitely not like a booming league. I think even over here,
I wouldn't be surprised if it was like a, when he was looking for somewhere to go, it was like a, you play for us and we will sell this team to you when you go. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was something that was set before he came there, and they just waited until after he was done playing for them to, like, finalize deals and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would make sense, because it was a strange decision, I think, to play there. Like, they weren't a very good team. Like, it's not like Illawarra is in New South Wales, but it's not like a big place. Do you know what I mean? It's not, it's like Sydney and Melbourne are kind of, you know, your LA and New York, if you want to compare them. You know what I mean? So it's weird that he didn't go to one of them teams. I'm sure he would have had offers from every team to go and play there once they found out that he was considering it.
Yeah.
So it would make sense that they kind of already had that in place, and then, they finalized it after the season. But like I said, it's a boss move to just play for a team for not even the full season. Like, he played for like half the season. They were terrible, and then he just bought the team and left.
That's crazy.
And went and became a top three pick in the NBA.
Yeah. So I'm not trying to take over the podcast, but we didn't really touch on this,
I wanted to
get your thought. I mentioned it earlier, but we didn't talk about it. Okongwu and Wiseman, that type of player, do you want that type of player playing next to Cat, or do you want the stretchy four type? Like, we know how the team feels about it, but how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, because I do like Okongwu. I'm not huge on Wiseman, but I can see the potential, you know, there. I think that it'd be a good fit next to Cat. Like, in Okongwu, I think he'd be a good fit next to Cat. He defends the rim. You know, Cat spaces the floor so much. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't think you need to play five out. I think there's teams that play four out offenses and survive just fine. So even Houston, when Capella was there, like, they were the kind of, you know, most modern team in the NBA. And they still
at all, so.
And Capella sat in the dunker spot, you know, for the whole game and just ran pick and rolls, and they managed just fine. I think it had worked well. I would like to see them try it. I don't think they will, like you said. Like, they seem to be pretty committed to Cat at the five, but I don't want to see them kind of get 2 years down the road and Cat still can't defend, and then they're like, oh, maybe we should try.
Yeah.
Play him at the four when everyone's kind of been screaming for it for the last 3 years. I think I think you should just, like, even if it's not a Hongwu, it's not like a high, like a guy you're paying, you know, $6 to $9 million a year. Mm-hmm. But if it's someone you just pick up as a backup center and then give it a test, and then you're like, you know, yeah. Oh, wow, like this works, I think it's worth a shot rather than just completely.
Good.
Yeah, like if you pick up a late guy.
He can even spread the floor some. He proved that in college. So, like, try someone. I think for them to even consider it, the person would have to be an elite rim defender or, like, a very good rim defender and have the ability to step out so then Cat can go to work. I don't think they...
At least to the corner. Like,
yeah.
At least space out to the corner, I think. You know what I mean? Just so you can post up Cat.
Taj Gibson stepped out to the corner a decent amount his seasons with the Wolves, especially his second season with the Wolves. And let Cat have a little bit more room. I mean, he wasn't doing it a lot, but he had a number of threes that second season he was here too, so.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between the Houston comparison is that Cat still needs to go to work on the block, whereas Houston never had anyone that needed to have space inside. Obviously, like, Harden and stuff, but, like, on drives, but Cat's still going to get a fair chunk of his points, you know, on the block. So I think you can't kind of have guys who are just going to clog up the whole lane, and Cat gets doubled already every time he touches mm-hmm. the ball on the block. So if you sit a guy 3 feet away from him, that just makes life easier for the defense and less people to pass to when he does get doubled. So I think, like you said, you need someone who can at least step out to the corner on occasion, and someone who definitely needs to be like a higher level rim defender and pick and roll defender, because that's the point of doing it, I think, is that you put someone in Cat's position who does the things that Cat doesn't do. Mm. Like in that scenario, if Cat's, you know, your Wancho, like if Cat's playing, like, obviously way higher usage and better player, but like if he's playing in that role where he's just like a stretch four who goes inside a little bit and runs a few pick and rolls, then, like, the upgrade's huge. And if you can, you know, put someone in Cat's position that's of a Capella kind of ilk, I think that really could work well, but like, I don't think we'll see it.
Right.
So, what else are your thoughts? I know you and Lucas discussed Malik Beasley a little bit the other week. I probably won't do a podcast on him. I think a lot of people have kind of covered that, but just to have it on here, what are your kind of thoughts on his contract?
We talked about it a little bit, and I kind of came to the conclusion that I would love to get him at like a $15 million contract, 12 to 16. When you reach like that 18 mark, I think we might be stretching a little bit too much. But I think the Timberwolves will match pretty much any offer. And it came out that Rosa said he's going to be back, essentially. He said that. So I think Beasley's probably going to come back, and with the depressed market for this offseason, I think hopefully 12 to 15, 16 million. He turned down a 3-year 30 million from the Nuggets, so we're assuming he's going to want more than that, but that would be my take on his situation in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same lines. I think, like you said on your podcast, which also, if you're listening to this, go and check out A Wolf Among Wolves podcast. You said over there, like, maybe you don't have to pay him too much more than 10 because he's got this bigger role, and maybe that's what he was angling for in Denver more than just, you know, like a huge payday. It was like, I want to be somewhere where I can play, you know, 30, 35 minutes a game rather than kind of, like get a huge payday. I wouldn't be surprised if he signs like a 2-year, $30 million bet on himself kind of again. Trying to have two big years here and then chase a bigger contract, especially when all this pandemic stuff has kind of blown over a little bit and there's a little bit more money around in the league and probably more teams with cap space.
Yeah, I think he's the type of player where he believes in himself so much that he didn't want to be in Denver because he wanted more of an opportunity rather than just a ton more money. Maybe he just wanted an opportunity and he can get a few million extra or something, so...
Yeah.
Maybe that's what his situation is.
I think that's best case for Minnesota. I think, like you said, 12 to 15 is probably the limit for me. I don't like to think of anything over 15, especially when you're already given so much of your cap to Towns and Russell.
Yeah.
I think you have to try and pinch pennies wherever you can.
Yeah, and you have to avoid the tax this year in case we have to go into it for the next season after that, because you don't want to be paying those repeater tax penalties where Glenn's not going to do that. That's not going to be an option. No, like the couple million he'll do, but that 100, I don't know, like 90 million or something crazy like that, he's not going to be paying those penalties for being in it 3 years.
Yeah, ago. And I think that's another case. That's another, you know, case to be made for not keeping all three draft picks, because that's another three players you have to pay. Mm-hmm. And kind of, you know, even if you just pick up a cheap free agent, you know, rather than spending $9 million on a top three pick.
Right.
I think that if that's what's going to keep you under the tax and under the repeater tax, I think that's something they'll definitely consider.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I think that probably covers it. Everyone go and follow Brendan on Twitter. So is it B_Hedtke, HEDTKE, NBA.
Yep.
Go follow him on Twitter. You can see on his Twitter, his YouTube page. You can go see all his work at A Wolf Among Wolves, and obviously Spotify and all your other podcast platforms. You can find his podcast. So yeah, thanks heaps for coming on, Brendan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.